Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf kuf chof tet. We're holding on daf kuf chof chet, amud beit, and we are at the bottom. The last thing that we discussed was the idea that for a yoledet, as much as possible, we should be mishana as opposed to normal sakanat nefashot, where we bedafka. We just do things as quickly as possible. And one of those things that we should be mishana is if she needs to get oil. So he said, bring the oil in your hair, which ended up meaning attached to the hair. And Rav Ashi had pointed out, if you hold schita, there is such a thing as schita b'sa'ar, so then it would mean that you would just carry with an additional shinui, you would carry a bottle of oil. Now, I just want to mention that even though the Gemara seems to say over here, that just a blanket idea that there's no such thing as schita b'sa'ar, the truth is that midiraisa, that's exactly how we paskin. However, unfortunately, we're very machmer on this midirabbanan, and therefore, in practical terms, one has to be careful when squeezing hair on Shabbos. It's if you washed your face or something, and you've got water in your hair to. Instead of squeezing it out in a towel or something, to dry it. Another thing I wanted to mention yesterday, we were talking about the tatar. See, Richie isn't here yet. I wanted to make sure that when he makes his beef tatar next time, that he'll be certain to wash off any actual blood on the surface. Because, again, remember the whole point that we were saying you could eat raw meat without kashering it is because the blood has not been exuded through the heat or boiling or whatever it is you want to be doing to prepare it. But if there's blood on the surface, of course, you have to get rid of that blood. Okay, we're up to Omar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, three lines up from the bottom on Kuf Chav Ches Amud Beis. So continuing to discuss the din of a yoledet. Omar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Chaya kol zman shehakever patuach bein amrat tzrichani, bein lo amrat tzrichani mechalalin aleihat hashabbat. As long as the cervix is still dilated, then it doesn't matter what she says. She can say, I don't need any additional treatment or whatever. If the norm is that would be something that would be done for women, we don't listen to her. We're mechalal Shabbos in order to do it because it's considered to be a sakana. And then nista makeva, from that point where the cervix is closed, so then bein amra tzricha ani and bein amra lo tzricha ani. There, even if she, this of course is if a doctor is not present. If a doctor is present, then if a doctor says she needs it, then of course we're going to do it, and then we'll do that even against her will. So and that was the version that Rav Ashi had, which is really much more machmir, because Marzutra said it. No, actually, what Shmuel had said was that Omer of Yonam Shmuel, in the case of a chaya, that she just finished giving birth, she calls man shakever patuach bein amra tzrichani, bein amra ein tzrichani. It's not a question whether she says I need it or she says or she doesn't say I need it. The idea over here is even if she says I definitely do not need it. So it's not a question of like what she says, that she didn't insist that she needs it. He's saying, even if she insists I don't need it, we're not going to listen to her. And we will be mechalalina le'ata Shabbat. Once already the cervix is now completely back at the shape, this time akever, so then it depends. If she says I need it, then we are mechalal Shabbos even afterwards. Mechalalina le'ata Shabbos. And there, if she doesn't say she needs it, so then we're not mechalal Shabbos. Omer le Ravina le Marima. Okay, so Marzutra is definitely kula, right? So how exactly Rav Ashi is basically saying a more chomerdika approach than Marzutra is, because according to Marzutra, even after the stima sakever, the halacha is if she says she needs it, so then we will do it. And also, again, this is a little bit of a function of Yirsa'ot. According to Marzutra, if it hasn't yet been Nistam, so if she says that she doesn't need it, it doesn't matter. tells us that we got to do it anyway. So which way do we paskin? Rav Ashi is being masnei l'chumrah. So who do we paskin like? Omar Lei, listen, the din is that when it comes to suffix defushas, we always paskin l'kula. And since over here we're dealing with the suffix nefashas, so suffix nefashot lahakel, and therefore halacha kemar zutra. Now, so Shmuel talks over here about the idea of nistam hakever and so on. Now, do we have a standard definition of what we call nistam hakever? Are we talking about an actual measurement of the dilation of the cervix, or are we talking about a stage that is defined in terms of time? And I mean, I don't know halacha lemaisa, what would be considered Ptichata kever. I mean, you haven't told me what exactly the amount of dilation is. I mean, obviously, we're talking about over here something that has to do with a point that is easily recognizable. We're not talking about a midwife or a doctor actually measuring dilation. So what is the halachic definition of Ptichata kever as the beginning of the birth process? Omar Abaye, it's Misha Ashe Teshev Al HaMashber. Look at the point that she's actually on the delivery stool. So that means that the birth is imminent. Ravuna Bereder Rav Yeshua says that it's from the time that she begins bleeding from labor. And others say it's from the point that she can't walk. And in order to get from her bed to the delivery bed, so she would have to be basically supported by her friends. You know, they hold up her arms. So she's in such labor that chaprotea nosoto taba agapea. Now, lamais we paskin all three of these because there's no particular order, a natural order to these things. There's different symptoms. Any of the above symptoms is considered to be ptichata kever and has nothing to do with our actual ascertaining a certain amount of dilation. Ad matai ptichata kever, and in terms of, you said, how long you are viewing her as being a misukenet. So how long is that? So Abaye says, well, it's 3 days. Question, big question over here, by the way, still no gealok lemaisa. 3 days from the birth or 3 days from the pticha? Okay, but in any event, Abaye says 3 days. Rav Amram B'Shved Rav Yehuda, 7 days. And others say 30 days. Now, the truth is, these are not actually arguing because we're going to see that in actuality, there are three different stages in what we consider to be Ptichat HaKever. And therefore, as the Nahadoim say, that Echaya, the question of the Psichas HaKever, of a woman who just gave birth, is defined lahalacha in terms of Sholesh, in terms of Sheva, Zayin, and in terms of Shloshim. So you can easily remember this as Gezel. Now the shlosha, so the first 3 days. So over there, whether she says, I need it, and whether she says, I definitely do not need it, doesn't matter. Now from the end of those 3 days until the end of 7 days, and that's the definition of Shiva. So over there, if she says, I need it, the chilul Shabbos, so then b'chalina le'ata Shabbat, all 7 days. Amra lo tzicha, if she says, I don't need it, then ein mechalalin aleha et ha-shabbat, which is the kula. Then from the end of the shiva yomim until the end of the 30 days, over there, even if she insists, I need the chilul Shabbos, we will not be mechalal aleha et ha-shabbat, unless, of course, a doctor says that she needs it. Aval osina yedei armai, but we ask a goy to do whatever it is that she needs, even though we don't consider her to be in any type of imminent danger. Because we know that he paskin that called tzarchei chayla nasina yedei armai b'shabbat. Anything for someone who is not a chola sheyesh bo sakana, he's just feeling ill and he's in bed and he's not functional, so not fully functional, so that can be done. There's no iser of amir la'akum. Something that is not a danger, nonetheless, you tell a goy to do it. And if, however, there is any kind of danger, then we said before, it's dafka, a mitzvah, for a Jew to do it and not to ask a goy. I mean, so the question over here is, and this is a very nogea question, halacha lemaisa ad hayom hazeh. What did Rav Amnuna mean when he said Dover She'in Bo Sakana, does he mean that the sickness does not have a sakana? Or does he mean that in not doing this particular dover, in other words, the need to do this particular thing, if you don't do it, will not lead to anything that's dangerous? So the general question, therefore, is if you've got someone who is sick and the illness is dangerous, are you mechalel Shabbos even for something that is more a matter of comfort rather than a matter of actual danger? Or does it mean even if the person is suffering from an illness that is in fact a sakana, but this particular thing that he wants, I need a pair of slippers, so we bring it from Rosh Hashanah, and not having a pair of slippers is not going to endanger his life, and therefore the dover she'in bo sakana is anything like that you would only do through a goy. So that's a big machlokas, and actually the Mishnah Berurah ends up paskening in the Biur Halacha l'chumra on that, that it's talking about not the illness, but it's talking about the actual event. But there are many Rishonim on both sides of the fence over here. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, there's a din of 30 days in the definition of a birthing woman. So what was he talking about? Obviously, we couldn't be talking about the 30 days that we just spoke about in terms of Gezel. That would be 3, 7, 30. I mean, why would he just mention the 30? I mean, the halakha of the times that we were talking about in terms of Chol Shabbos, that was already discussed. So he must have been referring to something else, that you should treat her as just having given birth for the course of 30 days. What would that be? I mean, in our day, it means that even though she is tohura before 30 days, she should not go to the mikveh, because there's too much of a chance of catching a chill, and she's very sensitive during that period, and because of that, she should wait until after 30 days. Oh, my Rava, when do we say this? We only say this if she doesn't have her husband nearby. If her husband is nearby, even if she would go to the mikveh, and now she's allowed to be intimate with her husband, then that intimacy would certainly warm her up, and she would not end up really being endangered by any kind of chill. So she'll go straight out of the mikveh into the arms of her husband, and that will keep her warm. And in fact, there was a maisa involving Rava's own wife, who, remember, was the daughter of Rav Chisda. You remember the horrible story of the dream interpreters. And anyway, so she herself had gone to the mikveh within 30 days, and Rava wasn't home. And she caught a chill. Vitzniat. And they actually took her on a stretcher all the way to Rava, who was in Pumbedita. So I'm to Ila Arsabatu to Rava la Pumbedita, because that was the only way they felt in her being intimate with her husband that she would be able to recover from that chill and that he would warm her. Om Rav Yerama Shmuel, Osin Midura Lechaya B'Shabbat, you're allowed to make a fire, big fire in the fireplace, in order to make sure that she does not get a chill. Now, there's not clear over here, are we talking about this is Shmuel's halacha that we said? In other words, even within 30 days? In other words, even though we said that after 7 days, she's not considered to be generally endangered, we won't be mechalel Shabbos, that does not apply to the question of heat. If it's cold, it's essential that even benogea Chilo Shabbos, that she be warmed, even if it involves making a fire on Shabbos for 30 days. So in other words, all the other things that you can only do with the goy, because that's not considered to be an imminent danger. Mashenkin warming, not. Okay. Lamaisa, it appears that the Mishnah Berurah paskens that this means to do it yourself only within Shiva Yomim. It's not a direct expression of the din of Shmuel that we just had before. So anyway, The limitation of Shmuel's halacha here to a chaya specifically made people believe that we are not worried about a regular sick person, that it's something that has to do uniquely with having given birth that makes her extremely sensitive to cold, and therefore he specifies l'chaya, because, I mean, otherwise wouldn't he have said l'chole? Or perhaps he said l'chaya just to tell me that vis-a-vis the chaya, even though she's not feeling ill, this, a chill, is a disaster. So they initially thought that what Shmuel was saying, remember Shmuel's a doctor also, was the famous doctor of his times. So that it's dafka for someone who just gave birth, but not for a sick person. And they also thought that it was only true b'yamota gishamim. I mean, if it's cold outside, I understand. But I mean, if it's warm, what's the big importance of making a fire? It's warm anyway. But the truth is, neither of those things are true. Below here, there is no difference between a chaya or a sick person. And it doesn't make any difference whether we're talking about the winter or the summer, because any type of chills are considered to be dangerous. So midi itma, since Omer Rebchia, Bar Avin Omer Shmuel, some don't have that midi itma, but anyway, it's a separate mimer just to prove it. But Omer Rebchia Bar Avin Omer Shmuel, he keys dam v'nitztanein. Look, even if someone had just donated blood and caught a chill because of that, that even there, you make him a gigantic fire, even in the middle of the summer, in the hottest time of the summer, because any type of weakening that's associated with chilled is considered to be a sakona, even if the guy isn't really sick. Shmuel once, gave blood, because in terms of our theories of medicine, letting blood is not a very good thing to do, except for very, very special conditions where we still will let blood. In general, we don't let blood. However, we do give blood, we donate blood. And in fact, the donation of blood is actually viewed as a healthy thing to do. In fact, Rav Moshe, even before it was recognized that the donating blood is a good thing, Rav Moshe needed to paskin what the din would be regarding giving blood. This was like a long time ago, because the question is a person allowed to be chovel batzmo, generally speaking, since we don't hold of bloodletting like the Gemara holds, and therefore, in terms of our understanding of medicine, all you're doing is you're wounding yourself. Are you allowed to wound yourself if the blood is not currently needed for somebody else? Because, I mean, they're just banking the blood in the chance that someone ultimately will need the blood. It's not going to go directly into someone who's ill. So Rav Moshe actually paskined, before it was even known that it's a healthy thing to do, that, look, even if, in terms of our medication, we don't hold a bloodletting, but certainly we're not going to view it as something that's mir chabala. If it was so mikubal, it was mikubal. I mean, you know, we're talking about thousands of years. I mean, there's indications of bloodletting from the time of Mitzrayim, literally mummies that were buried together with bloodletting, normal bloodletting doctor kits next to the mummy in case they would need to let their blood in Olam Haba, you know. But this was all the way back in the time of Mitzrayim. It definitely, you know, Galen is like major on bloodletting. And they were bloodletting, you know, well into the 1920s. I mean, remember that the barbershops were the place where you had your bloodlet. You know, you would go in there and they would, they would use leeches, or they would use these, at least cupping, you know. So anyway,
and that's why the red and white sign outside.
Red and white still is the sign of blood and bandages around the blood. So the Ramesha Taina, that look, I mean, you're certainly not going to view it as Chavala B'Alma. I mean, there's probably still elements that might be good associated, which turned out to be so, certain elements that are good. So he was Matirit. But okay, but in the time of the Gemara, this was basically viewed as the way to cure people. I mean, it's frightening to read the old medical literature and the medical textbooks about how much blood. You know, my God, I mean, it's awful. Before surgery, they used to let blood, and really a disaster. I mean, most people hold that George Washington was actually murdered by his surgeons because they let so much blood. Anyway, so Shmuel, having let blood once, I would say gave blood, right? And because of that, he got, even today, by the way, after you give blood, they give you something to drink, you know, something to eat. So it's part of the reward that you get for donating blood, a nice glass of fresh orange juice or something, right? So Shmuel had once done that, and he got a chill, and he didn't have any firewood, because it was in the middle of the summer, and he had this, like, really expensive chair that was made out of shaga wood, which was like, woo, shaga wood was extremely expensive. And he told them, chop it up and put it in the fireplace. And they did. And this was like the thousand dollar warm-up. Rav Yehuda Tzachlei Petura de Yavna, they had this kind of wood, which was also very expensive, Yavna wood. And they burnt it for him. Same ice, Rabbah had the same problem, and he had like a stool that he had chopped up. And Abaye said to Rabbah, well, I mean, Rebbe, I mean, this is Baal Tashris. I mean, what are you taking a good chair and smashing it up for? Omar Leis, Rabbah said, well, you know, actually, I think Baal Tashris of my own body is more important than Baal Tashris of my chair. So I'll go with burning the chair. Thank you. And that's a very general kind of thing that's become it's become almost the same. Baal Tashris the Gufa. I mean, so somebody said, oh, you can't throw out that beautiful Hershey bar. I mean, you just ate one little piece. It's okay. Baal Tashris the Gufa. I'll throw out the chocolate and save my body. So that's based on this Gemara. Amr Yehuda Amarav. La'olam yimkor adam korot bito yikach min alim l'raglav. Listen. I mean, if you have to sell even your roof beams, I mean, in order to be able to have shoes, there's nothing that is really, that's what Shasoli Colts, our key remembers, the brocha that we make of putting on shoes, because that's like an impossible design not to have shoes. I need to run around all the time outdoors without shoes. And on the other hand, I got to tell you that if you gave blood and you don't have anything to eat, then sell the shoes off of your feet if you need to and get something to eat, because otherwise it's really dangerous. You need to have some type of nourishing thing after that. What do we mean? What type of thing do we mean? Rav says, well, make sure you get yourself a little bit of meat. Shmuel says, make sure you drink some wine. Rav says, Basar, because he says, well, I mean, you're talking about replacing the nefesh with nefesh. I mean, you drain blood. Blood is the, as we refer, is the damua nefesh. So you want something that is part of the lifeblood. You want something that is not part of your own kind of body. Where Shmuel says, no, good red wine, because like you lost a lot of your red blood, so you should have some good red wine to take the place instead. Shmuel, on when he had gone on that day where he would give blood, Avdilei Tafshila Detali. So they made him tol, they made him spleen. Now the spleen is particularly rich, actually, in blood. So they would make that for him to eat. So much for Shmuel's own mimer of sumka chalaf sumka. In his house, they made sure that he got something to replace the iron that he lost. Rabbi Yochanan actually would drink so much wine. So he was going like the other did of Shmuel. There was so much wine that you can actually smell the wine coming out of his ears. Which comes the popular saying, till it came out of his ears. Reb Nachman Trussi Adekafi Tachle. Well, over here, Reb Nachman put the two together, right? He floated his own spleen in wine, so to speak. He drank so much wine, he was just floating. And Reb Yosef Trussi Adenafik Merivda de Kusilta. Reb Yosef drank so much wine that you could actually detect the smell of the alcohol in the place where they had made the puncture in the vein to let out the blood. Rava Mahadar Achamra Bartlata Tarfe, and Rava would look for like really a kind of wine that would be powerful enough. So it was the way Rashi's understanding, it was a vine that's already produced three sets of leaves in three seasons. So that seems to be saying that it's 3 years old, which is a problem because obviously it has to be 3 years old, otherwise it would be Orla. So, I mean, it's difficult to believe that that's what it meant. Maybe he meant that. That it was wine from the time that it was harvested, there's been three seasons. In other words, it was a vintage, 3 years old. Maybe that's what he meant. One thing I beg of you, he would say to his Talmidim, I'm begging you that if it's a day that you're going to give blood, you tell your wives, that's one of the girsas over here, not everybody's a girsa, tell your wives, but tell yourself. So you tell your wives, oh, Nachman is coming to visit us, referring to himself as Nachman, meaning Rav Nachman is planning on coming, and that way your wife will make a big, beautiful suda. Then I won't show up, but at least you'll have something good to eat. But if you just tell your wife, I may drop dead if you don't make me something good to eat, she won't make you something good to eat. So you better tell her that Nachman is coming to town. Vekulu Rumi Asuri, once we're talking about doing things that are a little bit of haroma, I mean, not exactly telling the truth. Well, there's actually another thing which is seems to be like really a horrible thing to do, but it's mutter to do the following, that a guy who's very poor and he just gave blood, and it's a sakana to give blood without having anything afterwards. So what you can do is, v'lo efshar, he can't afford to buy anything. So he can take a zuza maka, he can take like an old worn out zuz that he knows is most likely not going to be acceptable by the storekeeper. And he should go to 7 wine stores in a row. And what you used to do is you used to drink a little bit of wine to taste. Yeah, I'll take that wine. And then the guy gives you, okay, he gives you that wine. And then you pay him with this zuzamaka. And the guy takes a look at it and says, I'm not going to accept this. Oh, gee, okay, I'm sorry. I don't have anything else. So I guess I won't buy it. And then you go into the next store and you do the same thing until you finally had enough samples of wine that you had a full revius of wine. And this is not considered to be mamish geneva, because there are people who would accept this. It's just most won't, they know, but it's really worth something. And if, in fact, the guy would accept it, then you would give it to him to buy the wine. So because of that, you're allowed to do this. And if you don't even have that, you don't even have like a broken zuz, so then what you could do is you could eat black dates. You have 7 black dates and a little bit of oil to rub into your forehead, and then fall asleep in the sun. You fall asleep in the sun, you'll get so warmed up with this that will save you. And Avlet, now Avlet was a famous, he was a friend, a goyish friend of Shmuel, and he was also a famous doctor, and he was a big chacham among the Umas Ha'ilam, and he found Shmuel, who was sleeping in the sun. So he said to him, my God, aren't you the chacham of the Jews? You don't know anything about skin cancer? What the heck is wrong with you? Does something bad suddenly become good that you should allow yourself to fall asleep in the sun? So, bisha mihavi tava, something bad is going to be good? But what, you think you made a gezerah to make it good? So Shmuel said to him, well, you're right, I normally wouldn't have done such a thing, but I had given blood today, and therefore I stayed in the sun. And I figured I'd get some, you know, vitamin D, and I needed it, and I needed to be warm. Now, actually, that is not what happened. The reason that Shmuel was sleeping in the sun that day was not because he had given blood. It was because Ika Yuma Damali Bashim Shabakule Shata. There's one day in the whole year where actually sunshine is beneficial without risks, and that is the day of the summer solstice. So that's the Yom HaNafla Beit Kufas Tammuz. And that's why Shmuel was in the sun that day. And he didn't want to tell Avlet, because this was something that he had been mekabel. And why should I tell it to a goy who won't appreciate it anyway? And so lo yigla, so he made up a story of something else. Now, we also have, a simon, because these things are all interrelated, in which Rav and Shmuel discuss different inyanim of giving blood. So Rav and Shmuel, Damar Tarvayo, Kol HaMekel B'Seudata Kazat Dam. Somebody gave blood, and he doesn't take seriously the stuff about needing to eat. I mean, after all, he's on a weight loss, you know, program. I'm going to eat more. So if he's Mekel about that, then in the Shamayim, they'll be Mekel on him, and they're going to cut some of his parnasa. So mekilim mizrotav min hashamayim, because in the shamayim, the bezdin will say, listen, this guy couldn't care less about his own life, apparently. So what are we supposed to take his place? We're supposed to stand up for him. So why should we care about him? Hu al chayav lo chas. So ani achus alav. Another thing that Rav Shmuel Amar Tarvayo, that hai man de ovid milta, lo leitev hecha de korech zika. So a guy who gave blood, he should not sit in a place where the wind will be whirling around, like in an open porch kind of thing or something, because that will cause you possibly to become dehydrated. And to become dehydrated after you just lost some actual volume of liquid from your dum could be really dangerous. So you never know. I mean, Dilma Shafir, like, who knows how much that blood letter drained out of you? Umukim la revita, and you've just got enough left to keep you going, you know? And then you're going to get dehydrated, and you're going to lose some of your blood volume. But yeah, you could become amish misukan, you know, you'll get a heat stroke or whatever. And there was actually, Shmuel used to be very, very makpid not to be exposed to any kind of dehydration. So what he would do on a day that he would give blood, havirogav oven milta bebeta deshav levinia ve'aricha. So he would only give blood if he was sitting in a room whose walls were seven bricks, shev levinia. There's seven bricks plus one aricha thick, which is, wow, that's crazy, because a brick is three tvachim by three tvachim, and an ariach is a chatzi levina. So it's three tvachim, which means it's over 22 tvachim. That's like almost 5 feet thick, the walls, in order not to allow any type of air to get in from the outside. And one day, he was in one of these special bloodletting rooms, and he felt like, oh, I feel so weak. I don't know what's wrong with me. And they checked it out, and one half brick in the wall was missing. It was misrepresented as a really good bloodletting room, and it wasn't. But that's how sensitive he was. Instead of a 6 foot thick wall, he only had a 5.5 foot thick wall. And oh my gosh, he almost fainted. So he was pretty sensitive to that. Eat something before getting out of the house, because if you don't eat anything, then who knows what could happen to you. I mean, if you happen to meet a dead man walking, your face will turn yellow. Probably not walking, maybe it was a funeral. And if you bump into somebody who is a murderer, well, you could die. And if you meet up with somebody that with a thing that is something else is a little piggy, then that's kosher to something else, which is the way we refer to tzaraas. And another thing, and this is getting back to the list of things, is the fourth thing that Rav and Shmuel said together about bloodletting. Hayman de avid milta, somebody who gave blood that day, lisha portavara lekub, do not get up suddenly right after giving that blood. Sit for a few minutes and then get up and go. Because the Omar Mar, because we know we learned in Gittin that Hamisha Dvarim Krovim Lemita Yoter Min HaChayim. There's five things where if you jump up suddenly, you're closer to death than to life. It's very dangerous. And that is, if you just finished eating and you jump up, or you just finished drinking and you jump up, or you wake up in the morning and you jump up out of bed without giving yourself a moment to get your blood pressure all in order, but you lift up your body, the top of your body, or if you gave blood and you jump up, or if you just had sexual relations and you jump up, that's very dangerous. Omar Shmuel, Pursa de Dama, Kot Latin Yomi. Now, let me also tell you what the normal time is between giving blood, okay? 30 days that's normal. You shouldn't give more blood than that. Ubeina prakim yema'ed, once you get to the point between two stages of your life, which is before 40 and after 40, you should go down to once every 2 months. And then when you reach the next stage in your life, when you hit 60, beina prakim, you should go down to once every 3 months. V'yomar Shmuel, pours to the Dhamma also, if you want to know when a good time is to give blood, forget about how often. So what day of the week? Well, it should be either Yom Rishon, or it should be Yom Revi'i, or it should be Erev Shabbos. But do not give blood on a Monday or a Thursday. Now, there's also Tuesday's been left out of here, but we'll see why. So do not give blood on Monday and Thursday. Why? Because the Yom HaMam Yishyesh Lo Zechut Avot, Yakiz Dam Mesheni V'Chamesh. Listen, if you got a lot of schus avos and you're not worried about anything, you know, okay, fine, you can go on Mondays and Thursdays, sure. But normal people who aren't so sure about the great schus avos that they have to save their lives, they don't want to expose themselves on a Monday and Thursday. What's wrong with Monday and Thursday? This is a fascinating insight, is that on Monday and Thursday, you have a confluence of the din in the Shamayim, because according to Rabbi Yossi, Adam is Nidan B'chol Shah. And you also have the Batei Dinim open in Olam Hazeh, because the Ezra was betaken that the Batei Dinim should be Yoshvim on Sheni V'chamishi. So then that confluence of Midas Adin, that the Shamayim is looking at you, and it's being manifested in the world, and that you're also in the presence of Beis Din, that it's open even though you're not there, that creates a very strong Midas Adin. And because of that, not a good idea to expose yourself, because remember the concept of a satan mastin, that the satan is mekatrig b'sha'at sakana. So anything that you do, even though it's not particularly dangerous, you know, you're walking underneath this building that you've walked under 100 times before that is condemned, you know, well, yeah, they condemned it 5 years ago, but nothing's ever fallen out of that building. That's exactly when the satan is mekatrig. So the same thing would be true over here. Okay, but you didn't tell me what's wrong with the Tuesday. B'tlata b'shabata. What's wrong with Tuesday? My time alone. Ah, what's wrong with Tuesday is that Ma'adim ends up being the mazel that is during the day, it occurs in even hours. And remember that even hours are considered to be zugi. And zugi is considered to be stam dangerous, if you remember from Arvei Psachim. So because of that, it's also not a good idea, because Mars is considered to be a hashpa all over the world of blood. So there's bloodletting on a day of bloodiness and so on. So because of that, it's not considered to be a good thing. You'll remember that this is basically the reason that the days, we spoke about this, why we have the names of the days that we do all over the earth, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and so on and so forth. Those are named after the mazolais, right? So in other words, if you work out the seven, remember we talk about seven mazolais, right? The simon of the seven mazolais, which includes the sun and the moon. The simon is the shatsam chankal. So that's the various mazolais, which sun, if we talk about the beginning, Rashi goes through the whole thing. I don't want to waste a lot of time on it because we went through it in detail when we were doing brachas. But over here, the simonim of the beginning of the day is chalam katznach, which means that chama is the first mazel of the daytime on Sunday, which is why it's called Sunday, because it's chama. Levana, which is the chalam, the lamed, is the first mazel to be mishamish on Monday, which is moon day. And then you have the mem, which is ma'adim, which is Mars Day, or in English, they turn that to the Norwegian of Yom Shlishi, which is Tuesday, and so on. So you go, that's where Saturday comes from, and so on. So that's the Shabtai Day, which is the last one, that's the Nash, and so on and so forth. So because of that, also, by the way, in Spanish, they still keep literally these words and use the English. So in any event, this was something that was all over the world. And because of that, if you analyze what happens on Mars days, so then you'll be careful recognizing that even hours, Mars is considered to be ascendant. And because of that, it's also considered to be a simen of not being very healthy. So you should stay away from Tuesday. Says the Gemara, but on Friday, it's also, you've got Mars there during the even hours too, and you said there's no problem of doing Hakoza on Erev Shabbos. You said Beferish. You said you could do it on Erev Shabbos. So how come you're allowing us on Erev Shabbos according to this? So this, by the way, I'm sure all of you have heard of the Chabad Minag, that you're not supposed to be, you know, have Kiddush at the Shah Shishis on Friday, and it's Usher, which they think means 5 o'clock in the afternoon, which of course has nothing to do with that at all. But and it's because of very deep Kabbalistic reasons, as I once finally nailed down a Chabadsker and asked him, so what's the mucker this meaning? It's very Kabbalistic reasons. Anyway, it's basically this Gemara. So if you analyze this Gemara, it turns out that the fifth hour of the day, which obviously has nothing to do with 5 o'clock in the afternoon, which is nonsense. So because of that, they won't say Kiddush during that time. But anyway, so isn't that considered to be a sakana? The thing is, says the Gemara, that look, most people can't afford a su'uda after bloodletting. I mean, the su'uda, only su'uda that they had that was really choshev during the week was Shabbos su'uda. So because of that, they would bedavka go to give blood on Erev Shabbos, because that way they could go directly into the Shabbos su'uda, and then that would be the refuah. And so because of that, it became a dash bei rabim, something that has become a beaten path, so to speak, that it, most people do it. And most people do it. So then you say, Shermer Psoim Hashem. And people that follow the masses, which most people do, they don't think for themselves. So if, Lamaisa, you're in a position in which so many people do this kind of thing, and therefore you lose all awareness of its danger, that's fine. Because once that's true, you're just an idiot. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of idiots. So that's good. Problem is, if you're not an idiot, then you can get into trouble. Because then you know what you're doing. Okay. Anyway, this, by the way, is a very important halachic principle, which defines for us what type of things you're allowed to do, even though they're dangerous. And that is the question of, is it a dash bei rabim? Is it something that so many people do, and because of that, people have lost all awareness of it as being dangerous? You know, that was the heter for smoking up to a time before everybody became aware of the fact that it's dangerous. But now, it's probably an Isser Gomer D'Oraisa, but anyway, but that's it's all based on this concept. Omar Shmuel, if you let blood on a Wednesday, Yom Revi'i, which is also the fourth day of the month, or a Wednesday that's the 14th day of the month, or a Wednesday that's the 24th day of the month, or a Wednesday which does not have 4 days left in the month afterwards, that is considered to be a sakana. And letting blood on Rosh Chodesh or the day after Rosh Chodesh will make you weak. Letting blood on the third day of the month, that's really dangerous. And letting blood, or as we say, giving blood on Erev Yontav can make you weak. But on Erev Shavuos, wow, that's dangerous, man. Don't do that on Shavuos. Because of that, the Rabbanon actually made a gzeira that you should not give blood any Erev Yontav, because if you do, you might make the mistake of giving Erev Shavuos, where over there it's mamish asakana. The nafik bezika ushmei tevuach. There's a terrible, terrible, dangerous wind that is called tevuach that was available. Ilo kiblu Yisrael teira, avit tavach leila b'Yisrael uledamayu. Again, this is all. The Marsha says you should not say tvoach, say tavuach, because this is really a remiss to Nasa v'Nishma, and that means that the entire world was, remember, Yom HaShishi, we were waiting for the Kabbalah Satera. So what it means is that if Klal Yisrael, Chas V'Shalom, hadn't been the Kabbalah Satera, then the Yetzer Hara would have destroyed them. So that Yetzer Hara, who is tavuach because of Tera, ultimately is destroyed and checked, that the Gemara and Sukkah describes, that is all because of Kabbalah Satira. And if it hadn't been Kabbalah Satira, then the Yetzer Hara would have destroyed us, is the way he understands it. But okay, these are like all couched in terms that have to do with medicine.
Isn't that crazy that Yom Tavoach is the day after Shavuos, though? Isn't that some coincidence?
Yes, that is amazing. That is really beautiful. Omar Shmuel, that's really special. Ochal chita. Let's say somebody eats a meal and then he goes to give blood. So then he really didn't help himself very much, because all that he did was relieved the reaction to eating. Because eating also just fills your blood up with all kinds of garbage. And that's why you feel so tired, and it's going to take you hours to get over. But if you will let blood afterwards, that's the only good that bloodletting is going to do for you. But this is only where you were letting blood for purposes of refuah, that you weren't feeling well. But if you're letting blood because of excess blood, high blood pressure, or whatever, so then that's fine. I mean, bottom line is you did let blood. So la kule, so to lighten up your problem, that it's still going to be mekel. And if you give blood, you should drink immediately afterwards, which is why they give you orange juice afterwards. As far as eating, don't eat right away. Maybe it means that, or maybe it means you should only eat up until a chatzi meal, which is the amount of time it takes to walk a chatzi meal. Now, it's not clear what that means. Does, when you say drinking right away, does that mean the best time to drink is right away, and after that, if you drink, it would be not good for you? Or does it mean the best time to drink is to drink immediately? It's not, I mean, it's not going to hurt you if you drink later, but it's not going to be helpful for your bloodletting. And then we're going to ask the same question in a moment about the eating. Teku. Well, I don't know exactly what that meant. The same thing was true about the achila. You say, achila at chatzi mil hu dekamali. So what does that mean? That if you eat after the time of walking a chatzi mil, that's like a window that you have to eat. And after that, or before that, it's dangerous? So bosroch mikamiochi is bad for you? Or is it, no, that moment of the walking chatzi mil, that's when it's good. Before or after, it's not particularly good, but it's not that it'll cause you any harm. Teku. Machriz Rav, Meakari Bezuze. Look, if they're selling 100 pumpkins for $1, you know, okay, it's not the best kind of food, but at that price, I'd say go for it, man. And if they're selling 100 heads of animals, then you should go for it too. But if they're selling 100 lips for $1, even if they're giving it away for free, don't bother, because they're completely useless. Now, this is the way Rashi understands. I'll tell you in a moment. Tosis is shot. Om Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef says, you know, I never understood when I was in yeshiva and we were learning by Rav Huna. And, you know, there's just some days where nobody seems to be doing anything properly. It's like the whole place is half asleep. And you just have this frustrating feeling that the day is going absolutely nowhere, no matter how much you try. They would call it a lip day. Yuma disfami. I have no idea what the heck are they talking about. And now that I heard this, that it's useless to buy or to even take for free the lips because they have no nourishment, now I understand it. They were saying this is a gone day. It's a waste of time. It's a lip day. So this is Rashi's pshat. Tosfos says this is a little bit weird. It has nothing to do with anything that we've spoken about. So why would it be in this Gemara if you really think that this is the right girsa? So because of that, the Rabbeinu Hananel's girsa, which is mea carne bezuza. So what he understands that to mean is that basically they would go to the barber shop, and there were certain days where the barber would do like mass haircuts where people generally couldn't afford haircuts, and nobody would come in the middle of the week for haircuts. So he would make this big sale, you know. So sometimes you would have to like shave 100 people for one zuz. The same thing would be true about carne for the hakaza, which was also in the barbershop. But if he's ready to do 100 mustaches, that's the chat svami. A safam is a mustache. So if he was ready to do 100 mustaches, that would be for free, because that comes along anyway. Anybody that's going to be getting a bloodletting or a haircut gets a free mustache treatment. So because of that, it says that's where it came from. The idea of, well, a yumad isfami means you could work your head off the whole day long because he's got 1,000 customers and they're all coming in just for a mustache touch-up. You know how the barber always tells you, oh, don't worry, you can come in for a touch-up anytime you want. You know, and you say to yourself, yeah, yeah, right. I was going to end up just the tip I got to give you for the touch-up. It's not worth it. So over here, the guy works all day long cutting 100 mustaches, and he hasn't made a dime. So because of that, the kind of day where you work all day long and somehow or other you're always chasing your own tail and you accomplished absolutely nothing, and you look back at the day and you go, oh, God, what a mess. That's called the yumad isfami. You worked all day and it was just shaving mustaches. It's a very cute shot. I really like that shot. Okay, so this is the way Tosfos understands it. But now I get the word. Okay, the next thing we had in the Mishnah was, if you have a newborn child, the things that you do. So it says over here, you can clamp an umbilical cord. And Rabbi Yossi says, you can also cut an umbilical cord. And Tana Rabbanan, koshrin et tabur. You can clamp a umbilical cord. And this is a brisa, says the same thing. And Rabbi Yosef says, you can even cut it. And other things that were done that May or may not. None of these things involve actual Chillul Shabbos mamish. So the question is, what's the best thing to do? By the way, even till today, there's big, big arguments about how important it is to clamp an umbilical cord and how long you should wait before clamping an umbilical cord. And there's even women who refuse. They make up with the doctor in advance. No clamping, no cutting. I think they call it a lotus birth or something like that. It's like the, you know, Alpi Indian medicine. Anyway, basically, I mean, if you don't clamp an umbilical cord, it shuts down anyway within certainly no more than an hour after birth. So, and there's supposed to be good things for not clamping too quickly, by the way, also in terms of sharing antibodies, blood from the mother, and clamping too quickly is in fact not the best thing. So the other things that you can do are what they used to do is they would put the placenta into something warm. So tonima shilya, because it was believed that that would make the baby, keep the baby warm. Amar Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, benot melachim. So if you've got very rich patients over here, they would put it in a sfolim shel shemen. And if you're rich, but you're not exactly royalty, you can't afford sfolim shel shemen, but they would use sfogin shel tzemer. So that's wool that's combed and it's like very fluffy. And benot aniim would use like rags. Amar Nachman, Amar Rav Barvua, Amar Rav. The halacha is like Reb Yossi, and you can even cut an umbilical cord on Shabbos. Yom Reb Nachman Amar Rav Barvua Amar Rav. The Chachomim are made at Reb Yossi that you should cut the umbilical cord in a case of where you have twins and you have and they're actual identical twins, where over there you often have a single placenta, in which case these two kids are connected to each other. And the reason that it's kedai to cut on Shabbos, even according to Chachamim, is because if the babies move, so then they're going to be menatche adade, they may pull on the umbilical cord, and that could cause them to come to a matzav of sakana. Anything in that beautiful story in Yecheskel that we talk about in the Haggadah of Pesach, which was the tochacha that was said to Klal Yisrael, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to them, I want to be mochiach, who is the one that's been mean to the other one? So we call that the Parshas HaTochacha. That is given as an indication of things that ought to be done for a child. So it says over there, and you know what your situation is, when you were born the way I found you lying there in the blood, remember, and Biyomu Ledetotach was the day of your birth. There you were lying. Nobody had cut your umbilical cord. Ubamayim lo ruchatz lemishi. Nobody had washed you and smoothed your skin. Behamleach lohum lachat. Nobody powdered your body. Achtelo chutal. Nobody swaddled your body. And this redarshan like this. Melodotach biyomu ledetotach. So that means the birth per se. Nobody was there. But that's a raya that you should help to be miyaled the woman on Shabbos, because you're HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, look how you were neglected and abused. Lo charat sarech, from here you see sharech, from here you see shechotchina tabur b'shabbat. You should cut the umbilical cord. Ubamayim lo ruchatz lemishi, you weren't washed off, so from here you see that we wash the vlad on Shabbos. Some people take it to mean seriously salting with salt, but the Rambam explains it means powder, baby powder. Nobody diapered you, which means actually swaddling in those days, remember. From here we see that it's a good thing to tightly be malafef, and that brings us at last to our special Kapitan. I believe he's been waiting for this very special moment. What a beautiful way to end the day's daf of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ava to Klal Yisrael. Hadran Alach Mefanin.
Bli Neder.
Which, of course, brings us to Reb Eliezer de Mila. The reason we call it Reb Eliezer de Mila is because we've had Reb Eliezer as the beginning of two previous prakim. So, in order to distinguish between them, we finally give him his due, but we define it as Reb Eliezer de Mila, particularly because otherwise, I mean, we would have called, you know, Haoreg Reb Eliezer, or we could have called Tylin I'm Rebbe Eliezer. So this is the one that Rebbe Eliezer has given his own, particularly in terms of Mila. You may figure why specifically we'd want to do that, but we'll talk about that. Okay, everybody, have a great, wonderful day. And so sort of a long daf, very beautiful. I hope that it gives you energy for the coming day. Kol Tov, thanks for being here. Richie, let's see one last time that Richie face. There we've got a Gavi face, beautiful. And all of those who keep hiding behind everything, I'd love to see you. Okay.
Rebbe?
Yes.
There's a scholar called Menachem Maor who's an expert in putting together Mesopotamian law and Tanakh. Yeah. And he says that all the actions here in Yecheskel are how you adopt. That's the. It's an adoption. It's a legal adoption process. When you do this to a baby, it's now yours. It just fits very nicely.
Very cute. Okay. It's the Ramban actually says that there's not even the natural attraction of love to a baby until you actually do things for the baby. At that point, the bonding takes place. So that would make a lot of sense in terms of an adoption.